Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
You sound different. Are you, you're traveling, aren't you?
Just got a little frog in my throat. No, I am traveling. Mm. I'm in a windowless room in an undisclosed location.
Wow. In a tunnel beneath of Washington, D.C.?
Mm-hmm. It's something like that. Mm. I cannot divulge more. There are matters of national security at stake.
Also, weren't you signing books at the Worldcon today?
Not today.
Tomorrow? Is that tomorrow? Okay.
Wait, are we? Oh, it depends. What day is this?
Oh,
what day is it, Jason?
Well, I'm just going to post on Thursday and people will freak out. But, you know, why artificially limit the release of this? I learned my lesson. The kids are just going to pirate it on the BitTorrent if you don't
release it.
Worldwide simultaneously.
Learn about it on the internet.
So you got to do that.
That's right.
It's, you know, holiday time. We did our iOS app list, which it's like a half dozen. It's not like a comprehensive list, but it's like trying to come up with things that we haven't talked about a lot that we wanted to mention that we like. I tried to quantify it because it's not like the best of the year. It's really like a list of things that I kind of, and that you kind of, I don't know, discovered or appreciated a little bit more this year. And so I was actually pretty happy with it. The Mac list is the one that surprised me because a lot of stuff got enabled. A lot of stuff happened on the Mac this year that I found a lot of new apps at a time when it used to be like hard to find good new Mac apps. But the big thing that struck me about this year was I discovered on iOS, it's all the Safari extensions that iOS 15 allows.
Yeah.
And I know you wrote about the Safari search.
Right, on the Mac side, because it was traditionally a Mac one, but it's now also on iOS.
Yeah, and now I wrote about Noir, which is one of the ones, and it's the one that I use all the time, that basically will put dark mode on any website, because there's nothing worse than browsing the web at night in dark mode and getting to a page that just blasts your eyes with the white background. Mm-hmm, it's the worst.
Yeah. It's not great. Yeah, it's always hard because, like you said, I think these platforms have become so mature in some ways that we get at least I get very set in my ways when it comes to using apps, because I'm spending less time experimenting with things.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this the other day, just the evolution of it, like where it went from like, oh, you know, you've got a phone and like, oh, it's kind of difficult to do all this stuff on your phone, right? Like, because everything's built for the computer. And then it went to like, oh, there's some cool things you can do on the phone if you know how, right? Like, I remember the first age when like Uber came out way back.
Right.
And it was like a black car service. It's like, oh, did you know you can get like you can summon a car to your location if you have this app on your phone.
Mm.
And now it's like, that's just the default, right? Like, we've gone in a decade from it being a thing that didn't work very well to a thing like, oh, you kind of maybe find some cool stuff you know what you're doing, to a thing where it's like, this is just how we live our lives. And that makes it harder to find good apps that are new, because so much of what we do is like, well, I have all the tools I need to live my life. And every once in a while I find something new, but most of the time I'm using the same old stuff.
Yeah. The challenge is that, now that we've finished the picking and choosing of like new things, it's you're replacing. So it's like, it's a new thing to replace part of my workflow. Mm-hmm. And that's harder. And like one of the apps I wrote about actually this week, Tayo, is, I'm not using it regularly. It's really promising and interesting, but I sort of have an iPad writing workflow. And every time I go into Tayo, I'm like, oh, am I going to do this whole thing in here because it doesn't have some stuff and it does, or am I going to completely commit?
How much better is it? Is it worth the time? Yeah.
Right. And so you get that way with a lot of stuff where you've got, it's not just... like I admire people like Federico Federico Vitici threw out his whole writing approach and went to Obsidian and got built plugins and all this stuff, and it's like, I really admire that. Although on another level, I would say, and I love Federico, but he also is a searcher. He is always looking for the next big thing.
It's a young man's game, Jason.
I agree, but it is, you know. It's one thing to keep your mind open to new stuff and to try it out. But I think in Federico's case, he really is somebody who enjoys making those switches and those big changes to what he does. And I have a problem with that.
I would also add that I admire that he does it, but he actually does work with it, right? Like, he's not like the people. There are a lot of people who spend a lot of time endlessly fiddling with their tools and
never doing anything
at the detriment of never doing anything. And Federico puts it to work, right? Like, he's using that stuff and pumping out stuff all the time. No, and I that's always impressive.
The way he describes using Obsidian, it made me think of Scrivener, which is the writing app that you use. And I actually thought that it's interesting because Scrivener has a lot of features that have become popular with these note-taking apps. And it's almost like Scrivener happened too soon. Because they ended up building
something.
There's
definitely an element of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there was a good meme going around the other day on Twitter where somebody made a D&D alignment chart of writing apps. And it was, I think I came into the chaotic good thing, which is like Scrivener, but I don't use any of the bells and whistles. I was like, yep, that's me.
Because Lawful Good is Scrivener and I use all the features.
I don't know anybody who does that.
No.
Maybe, I was going to say, I feel like Anthony Johnson is the closest I know to like somebody who uses so much of Scrivener, but I think most people are like me and like, I found the three features I need and I use those.
You know, honestly, listening to Federico talk about Obsidian, what I like about it is all, and this is going to come to no surprise to anybody, what I like about it is the expandability and extensibility of it and the fact that you can write macros and plugins and stuff to get it to do whatever you like. What I don't like about it, I mean, first, what I don't like about it is it's a text editor where you can't change its appearance in the settings. It drives me crazy. You have to have themes, and the themes are complicated CSS documents. It's like, can I just pick the font, please? No, you can't. You can't. It's a text editor, but you can't. It's very frustrating to me. But beyond that, the challenge I have is that I realized, Dan, this is something that I realized about myself in college, but every now and then I have to remind myself about this. I'm not a note taker.
Honestly,
you know, Federico talks about how he's like, oh, well, I take all my notes and I link my notes together. And it's not just Federico. David Sparks does this. It's this idea of like, I've got a knowledge document database and they all interlink and I can go between them. And it sounds so cool. And then I think to myself, what would I ever use that for? And I have no answer. It's just, it's not how I work. I know you built a wiki for your novels.
Yeah, which I did. I was able to open in Obsidian, which was pretty cool. Because it's like a bunch of markdown documents that are basically using a tack-on syntax. And because it's a fairly common tack-on syntax, like something like Obsidian could just be like, oh yeah, I understand how you're doing this. And that's cool. But like you, I was not a note taker. I've told this story, but like I remember being in a college class once and I was like writing furiously and one of my friends looked over and was like, oh, Dan's taking a lot of notes in this class, and then looked closer and was like, that has nothing to do with what's happening in class. He's just writing something random.
it's like the way I work, and this is just how it is a lot of these tools are sort of like notes and research tools. And it's like I very rarely do anything that would be considered notes and research. And when I do, most of what I do is for a particular project, and I'll have a text file, or sometimes it's a note in Apple Notes or something, but basically it's a text file that has my notes in it. And then sometimes if it's WWDC or something like that, I'll have a few of those and I'll have a story that I write that will reference them. But it's not like outside of writing a novel or something, I would never need that. And that does, I'm not saying that it isn't useful. I'm saying that I get excited about the idea of it. And then I think about the practicalities of like, should I try this out? And I realize it just is not for me. Like, I like the idea of interlinking documents together and stuff. But the truth is, especially for what we do interlink documents together. We interlink them on sixcolors.com.
Right. Right.
And so I don't need to manage another set of documents with another set of links, because when I write something for Six Colors, I'm going to link to the Six Colors story of it, not to my own personal story of it. So it just doesn't work with the way I work, but I love the idea of building a knowledge base of documents that you're working on. If you're somebody who is doing, you know, research or writing a book, especially like a nonfiction book where you've got lots of notes and lots of comments and they all need to get pulled together at the end. And I guess I could do something like that for some of my longer form things. But the fact is, my longer form things are not as long as Federico's long form thing is.
Right.
And I could see how it benefits him there.
Well, I mean, he's writing a book, right? Essentially.
Basically,
and,
yeah.
And yeah, for something like that, taking notes can be very useful.
Sure.
But if, you know, like you said, a lot of the stuff we do is more short form, or even if it's long, it's not book length. And I mean, I'm with you. One of the worst things I hated about doing interviews back when we ever had to interview people for, you know, a journalism story was, like, I hate taking notes. Like, I hated taking notes while I was doing a journal. Like, it's hard for me to take that and, like, think back, like, oh, well, I wrote this note. Now it's impenetrable to me. I don't remember what it meant. But yeah, I like the idea of something what Obsidian does. And like we discussed, I have like a use case for it, but it is still there. It's like the Scrivener thing. There's just too much in there. There's so much in there. And I'm not even scratching the surface, and I can't decide if it's like, is this really an improvement over the system I'm using right now? But, you know, it's a thing that people feel very strongly about. And it's clearly an area that people are developing a lot of apps, you know, with interest. I haven't found a better solution for me. A lot of cases when I need to take a note, I open up the Notes app and I put a note in. Maybe I file it.
Yeah.
It was good to try and identify. Like, I did find a couple iOS apps that I have been using, which was nice. It is nice to try and find new things when we can. I know you wrote up Swift Bar for the Mac side, and
right.
It's like, that's something I've definitely been using a lot more, but like, it's fun because we use it oftentimes for similar person's reasons and then sometimes for different reasons. Mm-hmm. So that's got a cool aspect to it as well.
Yeah, it's that's the trick with a lot of this stuff is, how do you use it? And I do things that I don't need to do because I want to write about them, and that's fine, but mm-hmm. ultimately there is a limit to that where I'm as two people who work on this stuff and write about this stuff, the truth is that we can only do so much. And so mm-hmm. one of the things that, when we were at Macworld, like, we had a whole team. And so we would have a plan to cover everything. And it wasn't everything, but we could cover a lot. But as individuals, you can only do so much. So it ends up being that you have to pursue the stuff that you're interested in, or that you think you have something unique to add to what's going on. And so, you know, I look at something like Obsidian and Federico's coverage of it, and I think to myself, is this something that I should, you know, think about? And I came to the conclusion, no, like, he's much mm-hmm. better suited to it, and it's a bad match for me. And it's the same reason why we don't cover, like, Mac Stories is so much about, like, new apps and stuff. And it's just like, I'm not going to do that. That's not going to be coverage of, I wrote about a new version of an app today, but they want to, like, cover all the new app releases. And that's sort of what that site is primarily.
Yeah.
And right. I don't want to do that. That's not what I want to do.
No, I had the same feeling. You know, like, sometimes I think there's interesting things. Like, the other night, I, for example, downloaded the new version of Swift Playgrounds because I was kind of interested in that. And then I spent a few minutes looking over it, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. I don't know that I have a lot to say about this particular, you know, app and the updates in it, because it's not really something I do, but, like, it's cool that it exists, right? Like, it's like, I don't... Yeah, it's always a balance to try and figure out, like, can I find a wedge? Can I find a little angle in here to talk about this thing? And sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. And you're just going to be like, well, maybe I'll come back to it later. Or maybe I'll think up maybe in a week I'll come up with a great idea for, like, how I can try this app out, or what that app might be useful for. But it doesn't always come right away, for sure.
Yeah, what is that available to all developers now?
It is on the App Store, Swift Playgrounds.
The
new version. It got released on yesterday.
Oh, look at that.
It was like in the, and it's on the Mac and iPad. So,
oh, nice.
You know,
wow. Yeah.
So you can make your iPad apps on your iPad now, which is kind of,
That's good. I've been watching that. I actually have a, what am I allowed to say? I'm gonna talk to somebody about that later today. I'll just say it like that. I'm looking forward to that. So I've sort of put Swift Playgrounds. I kind of assumed that they had not released it yet, but I guess they did. So, but I'm gonna...
Yeah, I kind of snuck out yesterday afternoon because it was one of those things. I had it on my list of my Macworld column a few weeks ago where we were talking about features that got mentioned but hadn't been released yet. Mm-hmm. And Swift Playgrounds was one of them. Yes. And it looks like they just squeezed it in before the year was over.
Yeah, I mean, apparently it had been in private, like a test flight by invitation only for a while, right. But they finally have shipped it now. So good for them.
Indeed.
A little surprised that wasn't a sort of public for developers beta, but whatever. It's good that it's out there, and I like the idea of submitting something from the iPad to the App Store. That's a fun idea.
Yeah, I know. And it is a big deal too, because it has that, like, you haven't been able to write apps for the platform on the platform before. And, you know,
some people say that is the definition of being a real computer, right? Is
right.
Ability to write the software for it on it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we all kind of tacitly understand that there's probably comes a point at some point where, you know, you're going to have something like, you know, like Xcode, basically, right? Available mm-hmm. on the iPad someday. And this is kind of the first step along that process. So that's an interesting standpoint as well, because it is sort of finally moving the iPad on to a next step in its evolution.
Speaking of apps, I wanted to mention that I did write a little short thing today about Pixelmator Photo. There are lots of different Pixelmator versions and apps for different platforms. But this is the one where they basically did a 2.0 that it used to be an iPad only app, and now mm-hmm. it's also an iPhone app. They just updated it to also support the iPhone. But it's it is the iOS image editor that Photos should be and isn't. Mm-hmm. And I have written about it once before, I think, but I cannot recommend it enough. If you edit photos ever on your iPhone or iPad, it's got adjustment stuff that is, I would say, better than Photos, but it's in the ballpark. It's got a machine learning based auto analysis thing that does a good job that I think does better than Photos. And you can do a lot of sort of detail work on changing the image. But really the feature that sells it to me is retouching. They have a smart retouch tool. And it's literally, if there's a speck of dust or there's a person in the background you'd like to eliminate, you tap this tool and then you drag your finger over the thing you want to eliminate, and then it just removes it. And it's
cool.
Really good. And it's not only is it better than the retouch tool that's in Photos on the Mac, but that retouch tool doesn't even exist in Photos on iOS. So, yeah. I mean, for right now it's $4 on sale and standard is $8. Like, if you ever edit photos on your iPad or your iPhone, you should get it. I mean, it's really, really good. And it also works with the Photos library. So you find a photo in Photos and say open in Pixelmator Photo, you make your edits there and then you save it, and it saves it back to that photo in the Photos library. So it is fully kind of round tripping with Photos. It's really good.
I just bought it right now, because I often feel like this is one of those cases where I sometimes need to do like a little bit of photo tweaking, mm-hmm. and I always end up going to the Mac and going to like Acorn, because it's like, I don't need to do anything complex. I'm not very good at photo editing, but sometimes I need to do a little thing like even just a cropping or making a really basic image something.
A lot of times that ML adjust thing is all that needs to happen and it looks way better. But the example I always give is you take that picture of your friends or family or whatever at the beach, and off on the side is some dork in the water. And you're like, I want him to be gone. And you just drag your finger over that guy and he disappears. And it's like you were on the beach by yourself. Works really well. So I've got a picture of my family at a waterfall and pool on Maui. And it looks like we were there, just us. And that's because the four people who were also in the shot are gone, thanks to Pixelmator Photo. So it's another tool. It's not perfect. It can't invent detail where there isn't any,
right?
But there are lots of cases where if you just need to get rid of this little thing that's annoying you, it does a good job. And why that's not in Photos on iOS, I don't know, but it's not. So that
well, I mean, great. At least it leaves room for third parties to come
it
in
is,
and,
it is
and do some extra
nice,
stuff.
Yeah, I think retouching, basic retouching, should probably be in Photos on all platforms, but you know, it's not. And Pixelmator Photo is good. And I don't know why it took them this long to... I don't entirely understand Pixelmator's product lineup, because they have like different apps, and some of them are on the Mac, and some of them are on iPad, and some of them are on iPhone. I don't know why this app in particular just didn't run on the iPhone, because it always seemed funny, because to me it's like maybe my go-to favorite for this stuff, and yet it was an iPad-only app. I'm like, why? I don't know why. But anyway, it's iPhone now too, so that's good.
That's always nice.
Speaking of what we were talking about last time with delayed stuff, macOS 12.1 released. 12.2 is now in beta.
Yeah,
and Apple updated their website to say Universal Control is coming in spring of 2022, which suggests that it's even further behind than we maybe thought.
Yeah, it's very interesting. We talked about this a little bit on the Rebound this week. It's very interesting to me that this is something that got time in the keynote, because, you know, we were talking to our pal Kai English, who's a developer, and he knows a lot of people who work at Apple and worked on stuff, and he's like, you know, you got to be pretty far along, right? Like, you got to be in good shape to be in the keynote oftentimes. So I wonder if this was something where it was like, it turned out the implementation, you know, the devil was in the details, and they had to spend a lot more time working on it than they thought they were going to have to. Or they were like, is it the situation of that? Is it something where they overpromised and under delivered because they were like, oh yeah, this works great. And they're like, oh, well, we're, you know, doesn't work great. You know, it works okay or whatever. So I don't know. I'm very interested in that. Is it a matter of just resources? Hey, we've got to prioritize getting other stuff out there sooner, or what have you. But it is fascinating to me, because spring, you know, if you're talking about real spring, right, like we're talking about March or April or something like that, it's like, well, you're starting to edge into like WWDC territory again, right? People are going to start thinking about iOS 16 and whatever comes after Monterey. And it's like one of last year's marquee features still may not be out at that point, which is intriguing. So we'll see. I would not be surprised if it appears before like spring next year, like, you know, in early March or something like that. I'm hoping that they are being savvy enough about this one to be sort of like a under promise over deliver situation, because it does seem like that is a long time to let a feature sort of go without it actually showing up.
Yeah, I mean, I still wouldn't be surprised if it showed up in a 12.2 beta, but spring, who knows? It could, maybe not.
Well, it's not in today's 12.2 beta.
No, although today's beta... I don't know. It just, what it feels like to me is like, let's start the beta process before we go away for the holidays. So here's a beta with no notes that, like, what does it do? Puts out some fixes that they were holding, but otherwise it's just, I'm not sure whether this is anything other than like a curtain lifter for the next beta cycle, I guess, but I don't know. Yeah. Not on the inside of Apple, I can't tell you.
No, it's interesting. I mean, and I think we've talked about this in the past too, but like, is this a situation where maybe Apple needs to reevaluate the messaging of its product, of its platform updates, right? To be more of a, this is the 20, you know, back half 2021, early 2022 releases. Or, you know, another thing the guy suggested when we were talking the other day is like, does it make sense still in some ways to have like a big release every year,
right,
when software is being continually updated and released? Like, does that model still work 10 years on? I don't know. I mean, they didn't used to do this, right? Like, it used to be a big release came along every several years, and then it kind of sped up for a while, and it slowed down for a while, and then sped up again. You know, it's, so I would not be surprised if in some ways it feels like, hey, we need to change the pace, or just change the way we talk about it.
Mark Gurman in his newsletter this week said something about how like Apple does this where they delay these features, but they don't want to. That's not actually part of the plan, and they get frustrated that they have to. And I thought, is that really true? Because they're certainly behaving like they're okay with it, and that they announce things in June, and they know that not all of them are going to ship in September, but maybe not. Maybe they're convincing themselves that this is all shippable on time, and then they feel really bad when they have to delay it. But I don't know. I applaud them not shipping it totally, you know, like a half-baked feature.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Or a beta feature. Although a beta feature that you can turn on but is off by default, yeah, that's fine. But I'm okay with them doing it this way, even if they don't intend to do it this way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it will be interesting seeing as, you know, the end of the year is coming around and we probably, as you said, won't get a lot of beta updates between, the, you know, now and whenever I went, probably early like January or something like that. So, well, guess we'll have to see if it materializes the next update. Other than that, though, they've rolled out most of their features that they promised by now, with the exception of stuff that really requires like large scale buy-in. I did want to say, actually, a note since I was traveling. I didn't get to try this out because it turned out my wife had a bunch of extra Metro cards in her wallet. But DC does have like the express transit thing where you can like add a transit a card in the wallet app, right? Like from there and just dump a bunch of money into it, which I think is so cool. Like that is one of those things I'm eagerly awaiting in Boston's transit system, because it would definitely be more streamlined than the current process.
Yeah, I have only used that one time. I had to take a BART train one time after they did this, and I was able to do that, and it was pretty cool.
It's cool.
Yeah. Well, have a good time. This is why we're on this schedule, is you're in your undisclosed location, so have an undisclosed good time.
Thank you. I guess I don't have to disclose it. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, well, I already said that you were signing books at Worldcon tomorrow, so that's close enough.
That's true. That's about as disclosed as it gets.
And next Friday is Christmas Eve. Are we gonna be here, or are we gonna skip ahead to New Year's Eve? What are we doing?
I don't know. That's a great question. Should we ask Kalendar?
This is Kalendar. You shall take Christmas Eve off,
but return here before the new year begins.
I have spoken.
Back in 2 weeks.
For sure. Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, until then. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.